Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Talkin' Shit, where we are talking all sorts of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm Jess Sterling, and today we are talking Season 2, Episode 2, Family Dinner. And of course, I'm not alone. I am here with someone who absolutely 100% knows how to fold in the cheese, Stuart. Stuart, how are you?
I do, but I don't know what burning smells like. What does burning smell like?
If you have to ask, it's too late.
I think so.
Absolutely too late.
So bad.
And of course, today we're joined with a special guest, which I'm very excited about. Someone who is podcasting from Bob's garage in her little office there after she cleaned it up, of course. Lindy, how are you?
I'm excellent. You know, I wouldn't mind cleaning up a space in exchange for free office space. That's a pretty good deal.
Now, would you also be willing to get there when the person who owns the space dictates and pretty much work for them?
Well, 8 a.m. is a bit too early, so maybe not.
Yeah. I'm so excited to talk about this episode because it is one that, like, is really important for me specifically. Because I love cheese so much, that's probably the biggest reason. But before we dive into all that, Lindy, why don't you give us a little bit of your history with Schitt's Creek? Like, how many times have you seen it? Just the one time? Is this your first time? A little bit of your background on the show, Lindy.
Yeah, it's not my first time. I've seen it a few times. I started watching, I can't remember exactly, but it was either right after season 2 ended or after season 3 ended. I honestly can't remember, but I watched it, I think, on Netflix back then and loved it, and then just kept watching as all the seasons came out. And I've definitely seen most episodes at least twice, some more than twice now. So I'm rewatching along with you all, and it's really fun. But I, you know, I love the show. I was on board pretty much right away, but I remember by the time I finished season 2 for the first time, I was like, okay, I'm all in on this. I love it. Let's see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stuart, there is a moment in season 2, which I'm obviously not going to spoil, but I think for a lot of people, it is that like touchstone point, almost like a turning point of watching the show very casually and enjoying it, but not like liking, not loving is probably the way I would put it. And then once you hit that moment, it is, people are all in because, well, I think you've already had that experience a little bit, Stuart, probably because we are on a podcast talking about it. We're going in depth.
It's more of an incentive this time around for me.
Yeah. But there is a moment where it's like, okay, this just isn't your normal everyday sitcom comedy. It has much more heart. And I think that's something that will happen at some point in season 2. I won't spoil when. And I think you'll know the moment as well.
The fact that you won't spoil when just hurts me because I'm the worst person when it comes to not knowing things. Like, I hate not knowing like secrets. If I know that there's a secret out there, I'm like constantly like, tell me the secret. Tell me the thing. Go on, just, I won't tell anyone else. Just tell me. But yeah, having to live in this perpetual state of everyone knowing that better stuff is coming up and everyone knowing when it gets even better. And I'm just like, well, firstly, can it get, because it's already seriously up there. I mean, last week's episode was rated very highly. So it just leaves
it's more of
a state of not knowing.
It's more of just like a moment that I think is what triggers people to realize the like emotionality in the show. Is like, Lindy, do you know what I'm referencing at all?
Well, I know what my moment is, but I don't know if it's the exact same moment.
It probably is the same.
You should message me. I'm so sorry, Stuart. I feel so bad to come on here like everyone else and say, yeah, like it gets amazing. Just wait. I feel really bad because I knew I was going to say the same thing, but it's true. But don't worry. Like, you're almost there. You're already in season two. And today you got to see Fold in the Cheese. Like,
yes. An iconic moment. I've been waiting for you to get to this, Stuart. This is one of the, I mean, we've had the Ew David moment and the, that mm-hmm. Journey for Me moment. This is another one of those like moments that I've been waiting for you to get to, specifically because I love the Fold in the Cheese moment.
Yeah.
And this is very much, I think it makes the rounds on social media. I feel like it's one of the most clippable kind of TikTok-y moments of the show is the Fold in the Cheese. And Stuart, you know I love cheese. So you know that I was like heavily anticipating this moment for you.
Yeah. I mean, after watching this episode, of course, I needed to see that scene again. And being kind of lazy as I was like TikTok, YouTube, just search up. There's so much of it being clipped and things like that. It's mm-hmm. like the like kind of, I wouldn't say like viral moment, but like also the cheese element of it. Like, I think one of the first like defining things, and I may have said it on this podcast already, was that when I first like started talking to you, Jess, was that you were buying a cheese clock. And I just like instantly, this is someone I need to be friends with because she's unhinged. So of course.
I just love cheese so much. and I think it makes it even better that it's David and Moira, like two of my favorites, and they're mm-hmm. interacting and just the both, like Moira being insistent that it is her family's enchilada recipe just yeah. absolutely floors me. It's like, it's so obviously not her recipe. She has no idea how to make this. But yeah, before we go too far into it, let's do a quick recap at the top and get ourselves situated here. We've made it. It's the infamous cheese episode. So let's talk this through. Moira insists that she can cook and she ropes David into helping her make her mother's enchilada recipe in Jocelyn's kitchen. It turns out neither one of them can cook well, and they struggle with the instruction to simply fold in the cheese. Meanwhile, Johnny decides he needs to find an office space to ruminate on business musings, I guess. Bob offers him a space in his garage if he cleans it out first. Oh, and puts in some hours at Bob's garage. So a desperate Johnny does eventually take the workspace. Alexis finally breaks up with Ted after quite a few painfully awkward interactions. Ted is heartbroken and his wallet is empty as he booked a 2-week all-inclusive vacation without asking Alexis first. Simply unhinged behavior. Don't worry, though. He found comfort in Johnny's arms by the end of the episode. And hooray, the Stevie and David romance storyline is finally over, as Stevie herself is, quote unquote, over it. And the swiftness of her moving on bothers David. But you know who it doesn't bother? Me. That's right. Because it's done, baby. Stuart, were you as excited as I was to finally have like Davey. I always did, like, combine their names together. Stevie saying, I'm over it. I'm just done. I'm over it.
Yeah, I like the fact that they drew a line under it. Stevie was back to being kind of like typical snarky Stevie self. But, didn't we have this already? Didn't we have this at the dinner party?
We've had it like
this
three
exact
times.
Same conversation. Yeah. So, do I trust it? Do I hell? Like, no way. And also, David then being like, oh, and like really affronted by it. I'm like, oh, is that going to tip things the other way? Is it going to be like David
interesting.
Wanting Stevie a bit?
See, I'm Lindy, the way I read this is more of David is bothered because he likes the admiration and so is now upset that someone could be over him so easily.
Right, definitely. David is surprised. Wait, you're over me? But I'm awesome. Like, why would you be over me so quickly?
Yeah, it's definitely the ego. Lindy, I'm curious to know, because we've had a couple different people come in and weigh in on the David and Stevie of it all. Do you remember what your experience was with it the first time you watched? Like, were you rooting for them as a couple? Were you more on my side of like, I don't need this?
It's so hard for me to remember what I thought the very first time. I probably wasn't rooting for it very much. I really love their friendship and their dynamic and how well they mesh together in this town full of people who they do not mesh with. So I've always loved their friendship. It's hard for me to know, but watching it back, you know, after seeing the whole show multiple times, I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm just like, oh no, please don't do this again. But there you go.
Yeah, yeah. But many relationships seemingly ending this episode because Ted and Alexis are finally broken up. And it takes so, so much, Stuart, for us to get there. Like, it's he's like, oh, we're going to take a couple of weeks off and then we'll reassess the proposal. And Alexis looks like she's about to just vomit everywhere in the vet's office.
I want to blame Alexis, as we always have done, but this is Ted's problem as well, because Ted is the one not reading the room. Ted is the one that is not picking up the vibe that she hasn't properly answered you yet and kind of gave you a wishy-washy answer before and now is kind of alluding to a break in your mind. No, the writing's on the wall, Ted. Accept it and move on. But he is still kind of clinging to this hope. But Alexis, like, surely she must have let some people down in her time. Like, she's got all of these wild stories. Is it the difference that she is having to let down someone that she actually cares about for once? Maybe not enough to go out with, but, like, enough that she doesn't want to almost, like, kick a puppy in a sense. Because he is, like, a little Labrador, and he's like, oh, little buddy.
Yeah. I think he's so sweet. She's probably never dated someone so nice and kind to her, right? Doesn't she have a story about, like, being trapped on a ship or some, just random
there's so
stories.
Many like that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, she's been in these really bad situations. I don't think she's ever been in a situation where someone is so sweet and cares about her so much, and she's just not really into him. So she's probably never had to do this.
Yeah, I have the same thought as you, Stuart, at the beginning of, like, you know, Alexis has broken people's hearts before. Like, she's definitely ended relationships. And you have to imagine there's been some schmucks out there that are, like, giving her everything she could ever want. And she's like, no, thank you. But I think the difference is how nice Ted is. I don't think she's ever dated a nice guy. Like, I think she's done the bad boy thing where she's into them more than they're into her, right? We talked about, is it Stavros? Was that the character's name? Like, the very first episode that, like, ditches her. She's dated those types of men. But I also think she's probably had some experience with men who have just given her what she wanted, but not in such a, like, emotional, invested way that Ted has. I don't know that she's ever been proposed to, you know. Like, it's fascinating to think about what Alexis's past relationships look like. The thing we do know is that this is the longest relationship she's ever been in, so I think that is also playing a role in it. I have to
in 6 weeks at best.
You had mentioned,
keep that
this
in mind.
You had mentioned this previously on the podcast about how it's really not actually been that long. It's been like a few weeks, and I didn't realize that until you said it, and I was like, wait a second, what is Ted doing? Why
it makes
is he
you
proposing?
Yes, it makes you see
they
Ted in a whole different light
about it.
Yes, you can't, you shouldn't ask the question if you don't already know the answer, you know. Like, truly and it, listen, I have gone on so many tirades about Mutt and how I hate him because he's boring and I just think he's the worst. But I have to give him, like, some kudos this episode for getting on Alexis's case and being like, you have to be honest with him, because if you don't, you're going to get married and then you're going to get divorced. So you need to be honest with him. And she's like, what if I send him the sweetest little text message? And he's like, no.
Never by text.
He cannot do that.
No.
So I will give him some kudos for being like, you need to break up with him. And allowing Alexis to do it, I think it could have been even worse, Stuart, if Mutt had stepped in and Mutt had gone to Ted, which I feel like certainly is a possibility in some shows. Mutt isn't so non-confrontational and such a nothing that, like, he would never do that. But it's at least nice
bring
that
up
he didn't.
Some, like, past traumas, though, surely, because if Mutt were to be the one to do that, I mean, he used to shove Ted in the locker back in the day. Like, Ted would just be like, oh, you used to bully me then, and now you're bullying me now?
Yeah,
like,
Mr. Steal Your Girl.
Oh, yeah. No. But why is she going to Mutt? Why? She's got an opportunity to get rid of both of them, and she's not taking it. Oh, girl.
She, unlike us, Lindy, likes Mutt. For, can you tell us why, Lindy? Can you explain this? Are you, like, what do you see anything that we're not seeing?
Have you seen his abs? I think that might be part of it.
That's what it is. It's the abs.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Jess. Like, he's really boring. I'm sorry, but I tend to agree with Jess a lot, so I'm on the same page as you.
We do tend to agree. It's yeah. just like, he's so boring. That's my biggest problem with him, and that's why I find him so offensive. But here, at least he's doing the right thing. So I guess my question, Stuart, to you, because you don't know what's coming up, is are we in for like a Mutt and Alexis straight away next episode, or is she going to take some time to like reassess things? What do you think?
I mean, she should certainly take some time. That would be my recommendation just as a human being, because you shouldn't just jump from relationship to relationship. But isn't there like a rule of at least like half the amount of time that you were with them?
Yes.
You should spend grieving up to a certain
That's the Sex in the City rule, yes.
Yeah, but like that means that she has to just not get with Mutt for what?
Three days?
3 weeks?
3 days.
So it's not going to be that long of a wait. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're going to get together, aren't they? And then inevitably it's not going to work. I can't see this being the long-term romance for her, because he's just so boring. Like, she's surely going to get bored of it after a while. Like, Ted had all of these fringe benefits of being as well like as being a sweet guy, in that he would take her away. He would book out a hotel with room service. Like, it's a small little peppering of her old life, that the things that she really wants. What can Mutt offer? Washing her clothes with rocks? Like, no.
He can offer her his abs.
Washboard abs.
Washboard abs.
He can wash clothes on those. Yes. He has a barn.
Mm-hmm.
He has his own place, but like Ted's was so much nicer.
But Ted's is like a showroom.
Ted's is a showroom. Yeah.
Gosh, neither are really good options, are they?
I don't think, you know, Mutt has money. I mean, like, we've not seen that he's had any money to speak of. So
might get some of that mayoral money. Might like take up the
mantle. Yeah, because Roland is rolling in the dough, obviously.
You never know what he's embezzling. Like, he could be one of those like silent millionaires that just doesn't spend it.
Maybe it all goes on Jocelyn's embezzling hair.
Anything is possible, I suppose.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's stuffed under his shirt. It's just dollar bills.
Yeah, instead of the pillow, it's a pillowcase full of money. All right, let's talk a little bit about Johnny, because Lindy, can you explain to me why he needs an office space? What he has thoughts and he can't think in the motel room?
Well, Jess, you see, he's a businessman. And so he needs a place to conduct business. I think for Johnny, it's like he's always wearing a suit and he used to have this very successful business. He wants to be able to leave his living space, which is right now a motel, and go somewhere and think business thoughts. I think he just needs a little piece of hope for himself. And so he's like, if I just get an office, then I can do business. I think he's just really trying to make anything happen.
Yeah. Stuart, this seems like an excuse to me. This seems like I don't have a job and I don't have a business because I don't have an office. And once I get the office, the other one will shortly follow.
I think it's a combination of two things. Certainly that. It's definitely like, we are down on luck and I can't get us out of this because I cannot conduct business without an office. But I think it's also, and it's a concept I was talking about with my friends recently, men when they reach a certain age need like sheds or garages, as you'll call, like somewhere to go,
man cave,
to get away from things and just potter around and do things. Like, they don't necessarily have to like go and play games or like take up a hobby. Doesn't matter what it is. It's just about being separate from the world and in your own little space for a while. And I think Johnny kind of is craving a little bit of that, because he is a man of a certain age and he needs to get away from the motel. He needs to get away from the family. It's all too much for him. He's just like so like bogged down with everything that they're all doing. So he needs to like get away. So I don't know why his first choice was a cafe. But he seems to always spend his time
there
as well. Well, there is that as well.
No one there.
I think there are only like three places in Schitt's Creek where you can like sit down. Yes. So he's like, okay, well, I don't want to work at the motel. Okay, well, I go to the cafe every day. Maybe that'll work. Okay. Bob has a garage. Okay. Like there are
yeah,
only
those
three
are
options.
That's it. Yeah. And he doesn't have a man cave, like you said, Stuart. And I, of course, have to ask the question, do man caves exist in the UK? Because normally I think a man cave is either a basement or a garage.
Mm-hmm. They do, like, in the form of sheds. Like, there's a weird thing with, like...
Okay, so it's like a she-shed, because that's a thing, too.
A what?
So, basically, man caves have existed for a while now. And then women were like, we want our own thing. And so they'll call them she-sheds. This
See,
is
we just have... We just have man sheds, but they're
well,
not really...
Well, the equality over there, sheds. Stuart.
Anyone can get a shed. If you want a shed, go out and get one.
I don't want to spend time in a shed. Like, no. I want to be indoors.
No, Lindy, you can get. You just get your whole... You get a whole place. That's what you should get. It's Lindy's lavish lair.
Yes.
That's it.
Exactly.
It has to have,
and it will not have to alliterate. In a shed.
It has to rhyme or alliterate. Man cave, the men just weren't evolved enough to get to that point yet. Once she shed happened, then there's no turning back.
She shed.
It's a thing. Lindy, have you heard of a
one?
She shed?
I've never heard that, but do you have one?
No, I don't. And I should have one. I don't even have a shed. I don't have anything. Okay. My lawnmower has to sit outside and have a cover over it because we don't have any sort of garage or anything.
You should get a shed.
I should get a shed. We're finishing our basement, but unfortunately it's going to be a shared space. So I do have my office, I guess, but I work here like at this right now.
Yeah, this is hard work.
Here it is. It's
so you've got
labor.
A space in which you conduct business, so you can crack on with business.
I do. I do have a space. Unfortunately, it's nothing like Bob's garage. And Stuart, I'm so happy to talk about this episode for more reasons than just the cheese, which we will get into, because the Bob jog was in full form today. And I was so pleased because, yes, does Bob kind of suck? Sure, maybe. I don't care. I don't care, Stuart. You want to know why? Because when he has to go from A to B, he does his little trot, and that's all I care about.
I don't even think Bob sucks at all. I haven't seen anything that really makes him stand out as a bad character, for me at least. So I'm all here for the Bob jog. And I was literally just trying to scroll through our conversation to see if I could find the all caps message that I sent you guys. The Bob jog! Because I was so excited for it.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Lindy, did you notice the Bob jog your first time watching?
I don't know about the first time, but when I watched this episode for the podcast, I saw it and I was like, oh, Jess is going to be so happy. Here's the Bob jog.
It's just so incredible. You know, like he didn't do the clap that I love that he does when he lands at his point B, but that's okay. I can forgive that. I just love that he feels like, you know what it is? You know what I think it is? I'm a very excitable person, in case no one already knew that. I'm very excitable. It's usually like I love or hate something. I'm not really apathetic a lot of the time. And so having a person, having a character who is so excited to get from a place to another place that he has to jog, it's like, it just like he's so excited, you know? And it just makes me excited. I love people that can match my energy. And Bob does.
I don't think Bob's aware of his own excitement, which is why it's just this really kind of like low-key jog, little clap to almost like celebrate that he made his way there. Mm-hmm. Like subconsciously, he's like deep down just so excited for it. But on the surface, he's like used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just very endearing. I don't know. And so, right. So Johnny's looking for an office space and Bob offers him a spot in his garage. There is a desk there. Of course, there's like tires and paperwork and all this other stuff in the way. And Lindy, he says, oh, no worries. You could just file those papers away and then you'll have plenty of space.
I mean, that's kind of reasonable. If he's giving Johnny free use of his space, I mean, clean up the papers on the desk. I mean, why not?
Yeah, I don't think that's that bad. I think where we started getting into like a little tricky territory is when he's like, if you want to sell some old cars, like if you want to make sure you're here before 8 a.m. because that's when we open. Yeah. I think that's where Bob starts to cross the line a little bit, Stuart. And it's, and Johnny has to be very clear and say, I'm not looking for a job, Bob.
Isn't he though? Like, Johnny, you're living in a motel at the moment with no income. Take the job.
Especially because he has all these suits, right? Like, he looks very nice in terms of being a salesman. And he has a ton of experience. Lindy, I feel like he could do this job.
He could. I mean, he definitely doesn't want to, but you're right. I mean, he's got nothing going on. He should do something, at least for now, to start making a little money. Maybe then he can rent his own office space that's not Bob's.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I think he makes an arrangement. Okay, I get this office space in exchange for helping you out, and maybe get some commission if you're going to sell a car or two. Like, that seems like a great deal, especially because, I don't know, Johnny, you don't have a job. And especially if it's under the table, because then he could theoretically still be getting unemployment, which is against the law, and I'm not necessarily advocating for that, but he could do it.
I mean, could do it. Could also start robbing everything, but yeah, probably shouldn't. I just wonder, like, why he's not seeing this. Like, is it his arrogance that is perhaps just automatically debunking working for Bob, like, or just working at a used car place? But also, I think Johnny should take it because I feel like he owes Bob, because he did steal Bob's car and then break it when he took it on the highway when he wasn't meant to. And I'm not gonna forget it, Johnny. Like, yeah. Johnny, you owe Bob a debt.
Yeah, this is true.
It's so funny at first when Bob is offering the garage space in the cafe and Johnny is like, oh yeah, that's great. Like, thank you. Bob is like, you know, I know you'd offer something if you had anything to offer.
But he has nothing. He has nothing to offer. And so Bob takes the garage space and offers it to Eric, who you might recognize him from the game night episode where David was very bothered by him. And he does manga, I think, right? He illustrates manga, which of course Bob calls those Chinese cartoons. And he's like, it's Japanese graphic novels.
I love that line so much. Like, the clarification just of, like, Japanese graphic novel. It's, you know that Eric absolutely is just like seething beneath the surface of just, how dare you. But I love Johnny's also read towards Eric. Oh yeah, really kind of profitable enterprise that you're gonna go for there as well. It's like, Johnny, you don't even have an idea. At least that's something.
Yeah, that's the thing, Johnny. Wait, what are you doing? Who are you saying that to? Because you have not a leg to stand on right now. You have no money to your name, and you're trying to get a free desk in a garage. Come on.
Johnny is so funny to me because sometimes he's like so supportive and encouraging for his family, but then sometimes he's like fighting with Bob over this free office space, and he's like, and when Bob's like, well, you're not family, and Johnny's like, well, he's not family either. You said he's Gwen's nephew, not yours. Like, it's Johnny, so like, is so out of line.
I love it so much, especially because, like you said, Lindy, we do, it's like there's such a duality with Johnny where he can go from insulting Bob to having this really awkward hug with Ted and being like, they're there, like, it's okay. And basically lying about the enchiladas being good. Like, he has this like very kind side to him, but we have to talk about the enchiladas, as Moira likes to call them. Horrific. I don't know that I would be so bold as to try them because they look so bad. And because of the way in which they were made, like, it just, I don't even know where to begin, Stuart. Like, I love this scene so much between Moira and David of like folding in the cheese. How do you fold it in? Do I fold it in like a piece of paper? Like, what am I supposed to do with it? She's like, I can't help you with everything, David. Can you help me with one thing?
It's an absolute mum response when they don't know the answer and don't want to like admit it. Like, I saw my mother in Moira in that, and I was getting a little angry because I was like, how dare she? She's gaslighting me right now. But folding in the cheese. It, when you think about it, it is a really dumb thing to say, because unless you know it, you're not going to know it. But also, how do you mess up enchiladas? They're not that difficult. Like, just covering...
I messed them up.
Oh, you certainly messed them up, yeah. Especially if you're somehow burning a cheese sauce as well.
Yeah, and they were... Ooh. I mean, Lindy, the size of that pot, they were making so much cheese sauce.
What was... It was like a giant pot full of something creamy. I'm not convinced that was cheese, because it was a full pot before they folded in any cheese. Like, they had a bowl of cheese and they had a giant vat of something.
Oh my god, good, now I see bubbles. What does burning smell like? I love the scene so much, and I love the explanation for it too, Stuart, where we find out that, like, again, a little bit more of Moira backstory, where she used to know how to do some of this stuff, and then she met Johnny and they had people for all of this stuff, and so she lost a lot of that knowledge on how to do anything, and she doesn't want her children to be as, like, I don't know, uninformed, unable to do normal day-to-day things as she is. So I really ended up loving the explanation. So yeah. I think the whole thing works.
And so especially what we've learned about Moira and her kind of background as being growing up in a small town, it kind of perfectly fits. And I love the fact that she could look after herself really well and was kind of quite street smart in a way. But then to have David just dismantle that achievement of just, well, I used to be a capable human being, and David just being like, just Google it on my phone and look up whatever you don't know here. Like, that revelation where it's just like, okay, yeah. it's so offensive in a way of just, here is everything that you have built up as to be this like pedestal thing of how you once were and how capable you were. And here I am just dismantling it with one little quick Google search.
Yeah, saying. And Lindy, she says that she could bake bread from scratch. She could make a bed, fix a wobbly table, and start a car without a key, which is pretty incredible. It makes me think back, Lindy, to when she's getting upset and calling the bed a bastard in season one. It's like all of this feels like it's been kind of piling up on her, and this was like her breaking point.
Yeah, well, I like her admitting to David that, like, I have not taught you life's basic skills. But of course, she ends up talking about it in a very morbid way of saying, now I know how it feels to be utterly helpless like you and your sister. And it's like, okay, Moira, like, you just admitted that's your fault. So
yeah, and but she doesn't even know.
Is realizing this, like, I should have taught my kids how to cook, like, now I can't even cook.
Yeah she doesn't even know, like, when David is like, oh, I found something, and she's like, that's your cell phone. He's like, yeah. No, hit the play button. And she's like, oh, well, that's really easy, any fool could do that. And he's like, did you do that? And she goes, no, I didn't. And I love that by the end of the episode, I love this as a bonding moment for them. And Moira even says at the dinner table, like, oh, it's easy once you know how to fold in the cheese. Like, it's very, like, a cute moment between them. But both of them admitting, like, this is not ever happening again. Like, it was once and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I love that they always seem to get together on little projects. Like, we've had the barn dance, we've had Allez Vous, and now we've had the enchiladas. Like, whenever these two come together for trying to bring their minds together to achieve something, it's just comedy gold, because the pair of them can be so useless and yet capable at the same time. And it's so strange to see it, like, unfold the way it does. And you never quite know who's going to be the most capable in any given scene, because, like, in the barn dance, we had David who was trying to hold things together, and then Moira dismantling it by being too good at stuff. And then with this, you've got Moira leaning on the fact that she is meant to supposedly know this recipe, yet not know a single thing. She didn't even know they put in the chili flakes. What step are we on? Like, come on, Moira,
it's your recipe!
Exactly!
it's just so fun. I love them so much as a pair. And I don't know, you can see a little bit of growth here, right? Where Moira doesn't want to... She asserts that she can cook, but she also just doesn't want to be so helpless, especially because now that they are without all their money, she has to be able to do some things. And, you know, cooking is a basic life skill that, I mean, I don't know that most people have those skills for a long time, even into adulthood. Some people, you know, they'll order in, they won't ever cook. But she doesn't want her family to be that helpless, which, I mean, at the very least, Lindy, she cares about them, right? She cares about what's going on in their lives, unlike in the past.
I mean, you can definitely tell that since they came to Schitt's Creek, like, it's a very different dynamic. And there's a lot of, you know, things and time to kind of make up for. Like, David and Alexis are... how old exactly are they? I don't know. But
David is like young 30s and Alexis is like mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
And she says in the early episode that they're nearly 40.
Right? Yeah. That's why I was confused. I was like, I don't think they're 40.
No, that's just Moira being Moira. Yeah.
Right. So like they're like around 30 and she's realizing now that she didn't teach them anything. Like that's a long time to go without realizing that. But like, at least it's happening eventually. But I love the end where it's like, yeah, we're not, this is not happening again.
It's a one and done thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like we tried this. We tried to, you know, learn these skills, but this was not for us.
Mm-hmm. It's just a great episode because I think it has kind of has all the like funny moments that you want, has a little bit of heart. And I feel like we're finally closing the book on the Ted and Alexis thing, which feels like it's been going on for a very long time. Of course, we're mm-hmm. recording this weekly. So, you know, if you're binging, it probably doesn't feel as dragged out as it does. My brain just short circuited.
I mean, it could be drugged out. It depends on everyone's experiences.
But let's get into some feedback we have. Stuart, I believe someone by the name of Libby, which is not dissimilar to Lindy, emailed in.
I mean, it's different by a few letters.
Listen, it's like, you know what? It's close. It's kind of close. Lindy, the only other person that I've ever seen with the name Lindy was on an episode of television, and she was a monster. So,
was it on a recent Doctor Who? Because I heard about
it was,
that.
It was, mm-hmm. And she was terrible. She was truly a terrible human being. So.
The worst.
Yeah. She's doing damage to my good name. Can't
Don't you
it.
Hate when that happens? Whenever there are other Jess or Jessicas out
it
there,
it doesn't happen
and
often
terrible.
To me. Is the problem there aren't many Lindys at all? So the fact that one is bad is really tipping the scales.
Yes. Well, you're gonna make a good name for all the Lindys out there. So this is Libby. Sorry, Libby, not Lindy. Hi, guys. I've been really enjoying your podcast. Stuart, you mentioned that hearing season 2 gets better and you weren't sure what to make of that as you already like the show. I think it's that the show's a lot more cynical in season 1 and season 2 is sort of midpoint between the cynicism of season 1 and what it will be like in season 3 onward. If you don't find the first season too cynical or cynical at all, I think there's still a lot to love and be surprised by. And there are things I can't wait for you guys to cover.
Interesting. Much in the same sentiment that everyone's been sharing thus far, which is really good. The cynicism is a detail that we haven't really touched on because there is this kind of like cynicism that's been dropped of just judging them almost a lot. And it has kind of slowly faded away a little bit as we are getting to know and love these characters, which again is probably why I've fallen deeply in love with this show. Because again, we talk about the incentive, what with podcasting about it. Of course, I'm likely to do that a lot earlier than what's needed. But I just love it so much because they're lovely. They're lovely people. They're bonkers, but they're lovely.
Mm-hmm. The roses?
Yeah. In their own way.
They're charming, right? They're deeply selfish and yet charming.
Utterly charming.
That's exactly
though.
It. Yeah. Ted nailed it.
Yeah.
Poor Ted. Oh my gosh. When he is sobbing in Johnny's arms.
His breakdown, which we have to actually mention. We should mention it here, Stuart, that we watched the RuPaul's Drag Race Celebrity Edition that contained Dustin, who plays Ted, and he went on RuPaul's Drag Race. And it was, gosh, if you didn't already love Ted as a character, which I can kind of, I mean, everyone loves him, but I feel like he does get better. I think like here you kind of are just like, your brain is exploding with the, like, this is so fast for you to be proposing to Alexis, and like, he's making bad choices. I think he becomes even more lovable as we go on, but I don't know how you can walk away from his episode on RuPaul's Drag Race and not absolutely love that guy.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Melissa for the recommendation. She was like, you've not seen this, and then kind of reminded us that we needed to watch it. And as someone who loves Drag Race, seeing someone go on as a secret celebrity, secret in the sense that I don't know who half of them are, but go on as a super fan and really pay homage to it as well, and to come out of it as a good ally for the program, for the community, was just so heartwarming and gave one of the best roast performances, I thought.
It was, I mean, he was really good. I love like the first thing he does, you can tell right away he's a huge fan, even if he didn't say anything, because the first thing he does is burp and then apologize for eating sushi because he wants to be a fishy queen. Like, just like everything. So yeah, shout out to Melissa for recommending that. And just shout out to the actor, because it feels like he's like, not only is he playing this incredible character of Ted, but like he himself is like a really good person, which is, it's just really nice. It's just really lovely. We also got feedback from Trish, where she says, Moira realizing all the life skills she's lost in her privileged life and recognizing that in her children is another growth moment for her. We didn't touch on this too much, but poor Jocelyn being too nice to just outright say no, and Roland not picking up on her signals. Great for comedy, but poor husband work there. Could not agree more with that statement.
Yeah, he doesn't do stoves. Shut up, Roland.
Yeah. Oh, that's our dentist. Roland, come on. But like, Lindy, his argument is like, okay, well, you can use it, but you got to leave us some leftovers, which I don't think you want the leftovers, Roland. Like, you've never seen Moira cook in her life. Granted, he finds Jocelyn's cheese ball as an aphrodisiac, so maybe he just is into anything and everything.
Oh, yeah. Roland would probably eat anything, even those enchiladas, those creamy, creamy enchiladas.
Yeah. I mean, he stuffs like his whole hand into like, what is it called? Fondue, like a fondue pot. Oh, yeah. So certainly he'd probably eat these.
So much cheese. Like, why am I just realizing that there's so much cheese in this show?
Maybe that's the reason I like the show and I'm just realizing it now.
It's because of all the cheese.
All the cheese.
Yeah.
But yeah, poor Jocelyn. I felt really bad for her. Between Moira and Roland, I was like, she is.
Yeah, Moira says, I'll be back in 10 minutes to a clean kitchen. And Jocelyn's like, I just cleaned it.
So rude.
Trish continues, I like to think that Bob giving Johnny office space to work from is him trying to help him out by giving him a job, and Johnny is being rather ungrateful in this moment. Of course, it's not exactly helping him out if he wants Johnny to work for nothing, but we shall see. I know Jess might disagree, but Mutt is the bigger, better person in this episode because he tells Alexis what she needs to do, and well done, Alexis, for breaking up with Ted. Listen, Mutt is always boring, but at least he did the right thing this episode. So you got to give him some credit, an ounce of tiniest little bit.
And he took like, what, 15 episodes?
Took him a really long time to get to this conclusion. I'm always amazed at how much they managed to fold into a 30-minute episode. That's really so true. This episode went places.
I see what Trish did there. Fold in.
Fold in.
Stop. Oh my God. Especially because when I was doing my little recap at the top, I kept trying to find ways to fit fold in into like the first line. I'm going to do this. And then of course we also got a message from Todd who says Ted's description of Alexis as he's sobbing to Johnny has me Zeff, which for those who don't know, dead, deceased, you're dying of laughter. Beautiful and smart and deeply selfish, but also charming. It's just, it's so incredible. Accurate. Yeah,
so accurate. Terribly, like, just, I think if you had to boil down Alexis into a sentence, that is what I would copy and paste to people to try and describe her.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this episode isn't Alexis's like best look, but I will say that like the performance was incredible. All of the physicality of Alexis being so deeply uncomfortable with having to break up with Ted was brilliant. Like when she's talking to Mutt in the room and she's like backing up and then like curling up on the chair and is like, what if I just send him the sweetest little text?
Yeah. I feel like Annie Murphy has really come into her own this season. Like in the last one where she's shouting out to David and telling him about sleeping with Mutt and things, the way in which she's like gesticulating and like her mouth movements and stuff like that is so exaggerated. And you can tell that like she's clearly got more of a mindset of who Alexis is now, which is
And have you just heard the
mannerisms, just so great.
Have you heard of what Annie Murphy has said that she did in the role of Alexis to like remember like her physicality? She said she would always pretend she was holding like a small purse. And that's why if you'll notice her hands, if you're watching us on YouTube, you'll see what I'm doing. Yes. Her hands are kind of always doing this.
Yeah.
She always used to pretend she was holding a bag.
There is one like I don't think it's happened yet, but there's one scene with her hands that is just so good. Just like you just can't take your eyes off her hands.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's incredible. Shout out to Annie Murphy, because I think she obviously is the least well known of the cast going into things. But she holds her own amongst mega stars. Let's not put it lightly, like Catherine O'Hara and the Levies, mega stars. All right, let's get into our ratings. So we give out, of course, the Simply the Best point, which is the MVP point for someone who impressed us this episode. Stuart, who are you leaning towards this episode?
No, you came to me first. I totally don't have an idea. Who do I go for? Again, it's the age-old dilemma. Do I go for someone that's made me laugh, or do I go for someone that I think has done something good?
Mm-hmm.
Let's meet down the middle, because she did make me laugh. I am going to give it to Jocelyn. Because Jocelyn let them use her kitchen, and looking at the state of what they did to it, I'm guessing did not make a single complaint when they absolutely did not clean up after themselves, which is my
headcanon. There's no way they cleaned up. They know there's 0% chance they clean that kitchen. Yeah. Absolutely not. Not going to happen. Oh, God. It is a hard episode because I'm waffling between a few people. There's the pity point for Ted, who gets broken up with, but I can't give him the point simply because like he booked a 2-week non-refundable, 2 weeks non-refundable vacation.
1/3 of their total relationship time up to go on holiday. Like what the heck, Ted?
Yeah. So I simply can't give him the point. Like Bob could earn a point for like offering Johnny the space, but also the Bob jog, which just makes it just delights me so, so much.
He's trying to get free labor out of Johnny.
Okay, but he's offering office space. And then who I'm ultimately going to give the point to is Moira. The fold in the cheese, it's too iconic to not give her my point. I love it so much. And I think like, because David and her are both involved in those scenes, you could argue either one of them deserves the point, but I like the added focus of Moira's backstory. So I'm going to give my Simply the Best point to Moira this week. Lindy, what about you?
Yeah, I struggled when I watched this because I was like, okay, even the characters who made me laugh a lot, like they also did things that are like, ooh, like you're being a little rude here or something.
Yeah.
But I decided to overlook that because like they all did that. So ultimately I am going to pick Moira because she was just so funny with the enchiladas and the cheese. And even though she insulted Jocelyn and took over her kitchen, even the way that she did that was funny. I'll be back in 10 to a clean kitchen. That was funny, even though it was really rude. And then just the sheer panic and frustration when she and David are like, just fold it in. So funny. And then my favorite part of the episode, the very last line, she's just like, although it's really not that complicated once you fold in the cheese. So she was my favorite throughout the episode. So I gotta go, Moira.
She's incredible. All right, let's move on to our disgruntled pelican, the LVP of the episode. Lindy, let's start with you this time. Who did you not like this episode? Who are you taking a point away from?
Oh, no, you're starting with me. Stuart, I too hate going first. Okay. This one was tougher because, like I said, a lot of the characters I really enjoyed in this episode, and they had small moments that I didn't love. The opposite didn't really happen. There wasn't anyone where I was really not happy with them. I'm sorry to do this, but I think I have to give it to Roland, even though he was not in the episode very much. But what he did was just not go along with his wife's obvious clues of not wanting to give up their kitchen. He just completely, you know, gave it up to Moira without listening to what Jocelyn was saying. So I have to give it to him.
Okay. Funnily enough, I also was leaning towards Roland for the exact same reason. I'm sorry. When you are in a partnership with a person, there are clues. Like you look into their eyes. Like you could be at a party and just give them a look. And that look should signal it's time to go home. Make an excuse. Let's get out of here. And the fact that he didn't, like, you know, they've been married for a long time. So he should know better than to not follow Jocelyn's obvious clues. And instead sets her up for failure by being like, oh, did you talk to, I don't even know what his name was. Did you talk to Dennis? She's like, oh yeah, it was Dennis. Dennis is our dentist. Why did you set her up like that? Like, stop it. Stop it, Roland. He loses a point from me for being a bad husband, a bad partner. That's where I land.
3-4-3. Roland is a dirtbag for this. It's so mean. Like, for all the reasons that you both outlined, like, pick up on the signals, buddy. Come on. And also, just the way in which he has to not only call out Jocelyn for lying, but do so with evidence by going, oh, this is scorching, while he's, like, scoffing down what seems to be, like, a pie or something. Like, come on, man. That's so uncool.
Yeah. It's bad. It's actively bad. So 3-3, Roland, you suck, and you are losing points this episode. Now, we don't have any Moira wigs this episode because, unfortunately, Moira did not sport a cool wig. But I did want to leave us completely empty of something to discuss in terms of a fashion statement. So what I give to you is Alexis's funky breakup headband. Like, why does she think this is what you should wear to break up with somebody? I don't even know how to describe this.
Such a bad choice.
Was this facial expression that you're showing us in the episode?
Yes. I was just a screen grab, you know. But it's like a headband with like green, sage green ribbon, and then like metal prongs that maybe are supposed to be like leaves, like golden leaves coming off of it. I don't know, but like this seems like a nightmare on a windy day.
Jess, is this a hot take? I love the look. I think it's cute.
It's not. Okay. What I'll say is I don't think it's not cute. I just think it's like such a weird option to wear when you know you're going somewhere with the intention of breaking up with someone. I feel like you need to look a little schlubby if you're going to break up with someone.
Yeah. Like, you've got to make yourself not seem that appealing. Like, you've got to lighten the blow a little bit. And this is a really recognizable headband. Like, if ever Ted sees this again, which he will instantly recognize, he's going to be brought back to this day and it's going to be really sad.
Exactly. Like,
she's stamping down the dot of an exclamation point on this breakup. It's just horrid.
Exactly my thought as well. Yes. It's not the, maybe I'll give you a little bit of a cute little tease. It's not the most out there wild headband you will see on this show. It's going to put that out there for you, Stuart.
Great. Just so I'm looking out for headbands, hands, and cheese. Got it.
Yes. Got those it. Are the most important elements of the show.
Yes, obviously. All right. Let's tier rank this episode to reestablish us here. We have Hot Shit at the top, Full Bouquet, Love That Journey for Me, Ew David, and Shit Out of Luck. And currently we've only watched one episode so far this season beyond this one, and it's Finding David, which made it all the way into the top tier of Hot Shit. So, family dinner. Lindy, since you're joining us as a special guest, do you have any vibes, any thoughts on where you would maybe slot this in?
Okay, this is tough. You know, I don't want to mess up your ranking system. So let me just think out loud of what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I would say, for me, this should go in one of the top two tiers. Okay. Because it's got the absolutely iconic fold in the cheese. Honestly, it's that everything with the cheese is perfect. From every scene that has to do with the enchiladas works so well. From Moira saying, like, I've made those for you all the time. And Johnny saying, well, if that's the way you remember things, sweetheart, like, even before they even make them, it's so funny. So I love that part, honestly. But it's tough for me between the top two tiers because I don't know how much I love the whole Bob's Garage element of the episode, but it wasn't bad. It just wasn't as funny as the rest. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know what you two think.
Mm-hmm. Stuart, what do you think?
I think this should be in Hot Shit because I think not only is this an iconic episode for the folding in the cheese, as I've come to discover after Googling it, I think there are some real sleeper jokes in this show to the point where we haven't even mentioned them. So the bit at the beginning with the teppanyaki table and Alexis ruining it by putting her hair straighteners on doesn't address the fact that David left the teppanyaki table plugged in and switched on, which I was rolling around laughing at. And then also the play on words when Ted's got the dog and he's like, oh, I need to give Hazel a blood test. And then Alexis like, I think you should put her down. And he's like, no, she'll be fine. Like, yeah. It's this, what we were saying last week is these little touches of quality that weren't there in season one that are here in season two. And I don't think that we should grade on a scale. Like, I think we should reward great episodes for being great episodes. So I'd make a real strong case for this to be in Hot Shit.
Okay. Yeah, I was much like Lindy, waffling between Hot Shit and Full Bouquet. And the only thing that was keeping me from Hot Shit was like the, did we need for the clarification on the David and Stevie thing? You know, like we've done this a couple of times, but I also was just so happy to have that be like a, not only is Stevie done, but she gets to roast David in the process. So like for that reason, it's like, okay, it's not that bad because it's lighthearted and it's fun. And it's like poking at David's ego, which is a really fun thing to get to do. So yeah, like I think I'm convinced that it does belong in Hot Shit. It is such an iconic, like Lindy, if you're making a list of the top 10 or 15 Schitt's Creek iconic moments, Fold in the Cheese, I think makes that list pretty easily.
It definitely does. And when you sent me a list of episodes that were available, you know, to guest on, I saw Family Dinner and I thought, okay, I think that's Fold in the Cheese. And I double checked and I was like, okay, that's the one I want to talk about.
Well, it wasn't even that, Lindy. You were like, how has no one else already taken this episode? Right. Like, you put it up that high that you were like surprised that no one had signed up for it yet, which I think is possibly because it could have been timing in terms of like people busy on vacations and whatnot. Or it's just like people specifically were like, no, this amazing moment in season two is what I want to talk about, which like just says how much there is to love about this season. But yeah, I think for it being so iconic with the fold and the cheese of it all, that alone puts it in the top two tiers. And then just like the amount of just like funny moments and a little bit of backstory and Ted and Alexis are done, which we've been waiting for. So like, whew,
and we're Mutt wasn't awful.
Yeah.
Mutt wasn't awful in this one. I think that redeems everything.
He's not shit. He's not hot shit. He's like, he's at a love that journey for me this episode, but that, you know, pushes it up. Mm-hmm. So
I'm happy with this. I think this is kind of good. It does, maybe for anyone like kind of listening and maybe being a bit skeptical of this, it does mean that we are ranking these both as the top tier, so we only have down to go. But I'm fully happy with an entire season being in the top tier, like if it does have to be that way.
And I think it's one of those things where like inevitably there'll be episodes that like, are there gonna be shit out of luck episodes this season? I don't know, but they're not all gonna be hot shit. Like I'm looking at these episodes and thinking there are a few that I don't necessarily think would fall into the hot shit territory. It's just that like we just happened to have some very iconic moments in both these first two episodes of season two. So
I mean, we said this is our podcast.
Yeah, we can do what we want. You're not my real dad. So
that doesn't take away from creating another tier that's above this if we need to.
You know what the another tier could be? Creamy.
Oh fact that they're eating with plastic forks and knives also, there's something about that too, being like just such a vibe. Like, there are moments when you're like really poor and like that you're eating, that's what you're eating off. You know what I mean? Like, it just is very, I love that tiny, tiny detail. It's so perfect. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, this has been absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Both the first two episodes are in hot shit, the top ranked tier. So I absolutely love that. And I'm so excited for next episode, specifically because I can't wait to hear what Stuart thinks it's about, given its title. Stuart, season 2, episode 3 is titled Jazzagals.
I have no idea. What the hell? Jazzagals.
Yeah, so the word jazz and then the letter A and then the word gals. Jazzagals.
But all one word. Jazzagals.
Something jazzagals. Musical, maybe. Like jazz. But
if it's musical, what is happening?
Maybe Moira's old, like maybe between acting jobs, Moira decided to venture out into music and it's her old jazz band coming back together. I don't know.
Well, I'm excited because I'm fairly certain we will have a Moira wig moment next episode, if I'm remembering correctly. So that will be fun. But yeah, this was absolutely incredible. Lindy, thank you so much for coming on. We know you have a ton going on over on Whirlwind Podcast. So why don't you shout out what you have, what you're up to lately?
Yes. So on Whirlwind Podcast, which I'm a part of, we have a lot. We have previously on Shameless, we have Tuning In with Todd and Tommy, Whirlwind Investigations, which is about Veronica Mars. We have Doctor Who, and the one that I'm on is One Indescribable Podcast, where currently we're talking about Pushing Daisies. Jess joined me over there recently. That was a ton of fun. But we always have a lot going on. So if you're interested, you can find us at Whirlwind Pods on social media and, you know, wherever you get your podcasts. And I just want to say thank you so much for having me on here. I am so excited to talk about Schitt's Creek. I've been loving listening to the podcast and rewatching the show. And I have one more thing to say about the show, which is I don't know that I like anyone else would ever talk about this, but I love the end credits music. Every time it plays, I'm so happy. I don't click next episode. Like, I click out of that so that I can listen to the full end credits. So I just wanted to mention that because I love it so much.
It does feel like the music is kind of perfect for the show because it's like trumpets, but it's like, so it's like you think it might be classy, but then it's kind of like a little bit, I don't know, hokey. I don't know the word, but it's like a little bit like boom, 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 like kind of like silly too.
Trumpets are classy?
Yes, they're yes, they're classy.
So this is something I know about you, Jessica. So we've got trumpets are classy. What are saxophones?
Saxophones are notoriously the sexiest instrument.
Amazing.
It's true.
I want a classification of all brass instruments following
Do
this.
Do a tier ranking of them.
Yes.
It's like a one-word association game, basically. It's like saxophone, sexy, trumpet, classy. I just think generally instrumental music is classy if there's no words.
Sure.
That's
a take.
That's a broad statement.
I can't wait to disprove that.
Oh my gosh. You can't just send me like Bridgerton versions of songs where it's like, you know, they just take out the words and they just do anyway. What's the string? It doesn't matter. The string band that does the, I can't think of it. Anyway, that's it. That's the whole podcast. Yeah, that's it. You know, I'm also on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. You already know that. Go find us there. We're talking Buffy and Felicity, and we had to talk about Ted. We're going to talk about Ted. Have we talked about Ted?
You haven't released it yet.
We've recorded it, but it hasn't been released yet, but it will be released by the time this comes out. So go listen to us talk about Ted, where we got to talk about John Ritter. And I absolutely adore John Ritter. So, all right. That's the whole thing. We're going to get out of here. So until next time, warmest regards.
And best wishes.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable, quality clothing right here in the USA. Because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy. You're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.